Thank you for coming to SOAR with us at SOAR. We're launching today with Josie as a speaker, and Joe actually was one of the founders of the Beyond Belief meeting, and he did that in 2009. That's when that group launched, and it was actually in September of 2009, so they've now hit a decade in terms of that group. And that's the longest continuing existing secular AA group in Ontario, and started in 2009. Now, of course, there are 20, but that's the one that, it's actually the one I started going to and really enjoyed. So, Joe is also the author of the book Beyond Belief, and that was published in 2013. It's a very popular book. It's Daily Reflections, a book of daily reflections. And Joe also, well, he does so many things, so I'm, you know, just going to tell you a few of them. One of the things he does is he does go to the intergroup office in Toronto and answer the phone for people. He also now is working on different groups and different meetings at CAMH. So, with that, I would like to introduce you to Joe C. There we go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Joe. Yeah, you had to wait. I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I just got back from Vancouver, and I sleep in my clothes. I flew in on the red eye, got stuck in Calgary for a few hours, and with the aging population of AA, I don't think I'm at risk of being the first speaker ever to fall asleep during his own talk. But and just be something to add to the resume, right? You know, so I suppose instead of being, I always like to say I'm not an example of AA. I'm a sample of AA, right? Just this one's a little sample. And the way I'm feeling today, I might be the before picture sample. And as the day goes on, things are going to get better. But I don't know if I would be the epitome of balance and, rational thinking and that sort of when you say yes to everything, every once in a while you got to hurry back from Vancouver to Hamilton. And I'll share just for 15 minutes while it's still in my head some of the cool things. I was at a conference in Hamilton. In Hamilton, this is how it's going to go, in Vancouver, called the Recovery Capital Conference. And it was, the organizers went to a lot of addiction conferences all over North America and Europe and Australia and different places. And they said, instead of having the focus on addiction, why don't we have a conference and focus on recovery? Right, and they thought that was a pretty good idea, and it was really great. There was just people with lived experience just like us were there, and people from the treatment industry and policymakers and academics and that sort of thing, and I was there, and there was the usual suspects. Gabor Maté was there, and. He said something interesting about the origin of the word wound, and anyone who knows words, feel free to jump in and correct me if I get this a little bit wrong, but it's Greek and it means scar. And the interesting thing about scars is after we have a wound and it heals, does the scar go away? No, we have to carry that with us always, right? And the interesting characteristics of the scar is it doesn't feel as much, does it, where the scar is? And it isn't as flexible as the scar is. And that's an interesting way to look at trauma, right? You can get through it, but it's going to leave a mark. And let's see, there was one of the interesting things about it was, you know, people who criticize sort of peer-to-peers, AA or whatever, often they refer to a study, and those in the academic realm would remember the name of it, but it was 2006, and they love this study because it concluded then that there wasn't any sort of academic and scientific evidence of what makes AA works. And so they jumped on that. See, there's no evidence AA works. And it wasn't evidence that it doesn't work, just there was no really good collection of evidence of how it works and why it works. We have a sort of folk wisdom we go with that we know from experience, and lived experience is maybe not empirical scientific, but it's still, you know, it's been working. and there's been a lot more of that science since then, and I find that fascinating because I'm kind of skeptical, and you know, I let's just say I have a beginner's mind, so I say why a lot. You know, people go, this is how it is. And I say, why? Because, you know, why is it the way it is? I just always want to know. And so I just heard a lot about, you know, how they sort of, and most of this is common sense to us, but now from a scientific point of view, there's something called, what do they call it? CHIME. And it's sort of a progress of long-term recovery. And it starts with connection. And that gives people hope. That's part two. And then identity. And then M is meaning in our life. And then E is empowerment. And I'm going to talk a little, and I think that's true. There is all sorts of other things. One of the things they found is there is clinical cynicism. A study was done in the UK and in the States and in New Zealand and Australia, and they looked at the percentage of people who enter treatment and what percentage of them finally achieve 5 years or more sobriety. And I don't know if you have any idea what that is, but in this study, in this sample size of about 1,800 people or whatever, it was 58%. Then they asked, when that study came out in Wales, and they asked the professionals who work with us in the, you know, sort of detoxes and in the treatment centers, what percentage of us they thought achieved long-term sobriety, and they thought it was 7%. So they're looking at us like we got a 7% chance, you know, like that's got to affect the way the type of care you give. So anyway, I found it super informative and super hopeful. And, you know, there's, you know, many miles to go, but there's a lot of people who love us very much and are working very hard. And people who need love the most deserve it the least. And we've all been accused of that once or twice. I know I have. So anyway, those were some of the things that we learned. Stephen Page of Bare Naked Ladies was sharing some of his lived experience. Who would think a guy who names a band Bare Naked Ladies would have issues, eh? But he talked about his own mental health journey. You know, he was a gifted child, also bipolar. He was in the news for, you know, criminal charges with cocaine and all that sort of thing. And he's been, you know, he lost his band, but he didn't lose his recovery. He's so he was sharing a little bit about that, played a little music too. That was kind of nice. And I actually wanted to ask Johann Hari. He says, like, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. He says the opposite of addiction is connection. And I go, okay, well, everyone goes, yeah, and they applaud. I go, but, you know, as an addict, I had a community. I had a connection, this underground community, right? At the crack house, you've got friends there, right? The smokers outside, they've got friends there, right? Like, I think it's kind of a reductionist way of looking at it, right? Like, I think what we need is good influences. And I'm going to talk just in the 10 minutes I have about good influences and how that affected my sobriety. And I'm going to take the identity, because long before I was coming to atheist and agnostic sort of gatherings and that sort of thing, I came to sobriety a high school student. I wasn't planning on hanging around. I was actually planning my exit strategy. You wouldn't know by talking to me because I said all the right things. I mean, it's something you learn as a teenage alcoholic that the truth isn't your friend, right? You know, you can't walk into a bar and say, I'm only 15, but I'm really thirsty. Can we work something out? You know, you have to act like you own the place. And, you know, so, you know, in AA, I would say I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic, not because I had accepted the truth and I was taking responsibility, but I said that because Roger said, I'm Roger and I'm an alcoholic. And if he had said, I'm Roger and I'm with the Steelworkers Union, I would have said, I'm Joe and I'm with the Steelworkers Union. I just would have said, you know, just go with the flow, right? Just say whatever everybody, you know. So, you know, like I saw what happened to people who resisted. People gang up on them in the corner and they can't get away. And, you know, I just learned how to say all the right things while I was planning my escape. Like, did I want to stay in AA? No. Did I want what you had? Nothing personal. You know, somehow dying a tragic alcoholic death still seemed more romantic to me than living sober. Living sober seemed provisional. Like being a quitter, right? Like that just doesn't sound like, and first prize quitter is, you know, like it just didn't seem like there was much of a future in, you know, quitter, right? And this is who I was and where I was. I was hanging around in AA. I was a charming mofo. I got along with everybody. But I couldn't breathe. I got to get out of here, right? And I was bringing my cousin around because I was convinced she was an alcoholic, and that no problem there. I have that kind of vision and that kind of empathy that is unique. You know, someone said, well, you should take her to the St. Jerome Young People's Conference. I lived in Montreal at the time and was going to meetings there. Have you ever been to a young people's conference? And I'm sure I said, oh yeah, hundreds of them. Yeah, I don't know what I said, but you know, that's just how I was, right? And yeah, so you should go and it'll be great. And I went. And it was like a whole weekend. You couldn't just go and get the heck out of Dodge, right? You know, like you people got to know you. It was a small group, you know, a little bit, maybe 200, 300. And, you know, it wasn't just meeting. You know, there was like a volleyball game, and there was a dance, and there was hanging around and talking. And what were people talking about? People were talking about getting back in their band, or starting a new band, or starting a business, or going back to school, or hitchhiking across Europe, or living this sort of straight edge life that sounded kinda little bit attractive, like something I would want. And it, I didn't come to believe, and then I was sober, right? I came. I better go again. I came to, the fog lifted a bit, and my closed-mindedness gave in a little bit. And then I came to believe that I could do this. It was possible, because before I got to AA, I was an experienced quitter. I had quit drinking for people I loved, for goals I had set, for external reasons, or for just shame. I just don't want to. I need a do-over. I don't want to go through that again. And I could never stay quit, right? And I looked at your steps, and the first one was never drink again. Well, the rest have to be easy, right? And then I look at them, I go, wow, they took integrity and, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I didn't have much of that, and I certainly didn't have any integrity. It didn't look like something that I could even do. So what do you do when you know you can't do it? You say, I quit, right? I quit before you fire me. But I came back from this young people's thing just sort of, maybe there is something to this sobriety, because people were talking about going camping. And I went camping drinking with grand plans of summiting mountains and, challenging Class 3 rapids. But I never got past in front of the fire pit lying down drunk, right? And none of that ever happened. And these people were talking about the Adirondacks and going out to Banff and, summiting Mount Bordeaux. And I thought, yeah, maybe. So it just, I found some community. I found hope. And I had this identity of an alcoholic as not a negative thing, right? Okay, so I'm an alcoholic. Like, I'm left-handed, right? There's certain disadvantages to being left-handed in a right-handed world. But, I get by, right? It's not awful. And that was my first exposure at, Roger talked about I answer the phones at Toronto Intergroup. And sometimes someone will call and they'll say, is this AA? Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I thought about this before and then I didn't go. I'm thinking it's been pretty rough. I'm on a bit of a losing streak and I think I have to go to a meeting. I go, that's not a very good idea. And he said, wait a minute, is this AA? And I go, no, like AA is good. Like, it works for me. But if you go to a meeting, I can guarantee you you're going to get a wrong impression about AA from that meeting you went to. It could be wrong positive, a false positive, could be a false negative. But the only way to, because there isn't a AA, right? There isn't the AA. You got to go to a dozen meetings in a short period of time. And if you find one that you think you like, go back to that one again just to see if it's as good as you thought it was. And then make a decision. And if you find you stayed sober in that time, I'll make you the same promise they promised me when I came here. Just give it a try. If you want to leave, we'll refund your misery. You'll probably have a few bucks for a pretty good run, right? You know, at least a good start, you know? And so I think it's important to get to find your people, you know, because they aren't at every AA meeting, right? It just, I mean, I didn't like every bar I went to. Oh, I finished my drink before I left, but, you know, like I didn't come back to all of them, right? You know, and so I think that's hugely important. And I see it in, when we started that meeting 10 years ago, lots of people in long-term sobriety get fed up with the meeting because they're not doing things the way I think they should be doing things. And I'm just going to go start my own meeting, and you guys, right? And off you go, right? Like, this wasn't new. And I wondered, is it just going to be us curmudgeons complaining about the way they're doing things here in our agnostic meeting, right? And serve a purpose. But now, if you go there, you're lucky to find one or two of the original members there. You know, in a, there'll be 20, 30 people around the table, and they all, none of them have ever known an AA that didn't have agnostic AA, because they've been sober less than 10 years, right? So you know, when one of us comes and complains about, you know, blah, 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 traditional AA, well, why are you complaining about that here, right? You know, like, you know, just, you know, relax, chill out a little bit, you know, maybe you're stressed out a bit, you know? And when that happened, when people started coming, and like I had a hint that people were going to need this, that I needed this. I needed to come to a meeting where I could speak my absolute truth without starting with, I don't mean to offend anybody, but, right? Like I just wanted to just say how it was for me in my own language, and I really needed that, and I thought other people would too. It seems you do. And I'm glad you're here. And I think this is great what we're doing here. I think it's so important that all, like, I've done a little bit of time, like, looking at sort of special purpose groups and the history of special purpose groups. And we're not special. They all get off to a rough go of it, right? The first African American members in AA were not well treated. We did not treat them well. The first women in AA, we did not treat them well. The first LGBTQ members, we did not treat them well. The first agnostics and atheists, boo hoo hoo, we didn't all treat them well, because like lots of people accepted us, right? But I always remember the, you can't have a chip on the shoulder remembering that. but you know, AA grows, right? You know, I was telling someone else that there's no one who's an intergroup rep who even remembers a Toronto that didn't have agnostic groups, and most of them didn't even know they were ever not AA groups in Toronto, right? Because they've been, you know, that was 6 years ago, right? Time marches on, right? And so it's you know, it just becomes the new normal. And I think having an identity of something that you're not ashamed of, that you're proud of, is such a big part of my sobriety. I assume it's a big part of yours, and that's why you're here. Looking forward to spending the day, even if I don't stay awake for all of it. Thanks, everybody.